Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 114.
This week on the podcast, the Supreme Court is now in the business of telling women how to use their own bodies because Jesus.
A whole bunch of stodgy white men are not happy with Obama's attempts to accomplish things.
Thad Cochran finds that getting elected can lead to having voters all up in your grill.
And this week on Hillary Pillory, is now a good time to casually forget about Iraq?
The World Cup is apparently going to make America the socialist utopia we've always dreamed of.
And we find proof this week that anti-immigration advocates wear disgusting underwear.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. And you can find us on iTunes, and you can find us on Stitcher, and you can find us on Facebook, and you can find us on Twitter. And I feel like I could do a whole, like, Christmas Eve rhyme there if I wanted to.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a second verse, so it was too bad. Too bad. Yeah. In any case, this has just been the most exciting slash worst week in American history.
I know. We delayed the podcast because we both had, well, no, actually,
that's
I think
a lie.
It was just me. It was
Brent,
just, it was
Brent had
me.
Work.
I had to work, and then I had to...
I had a day of lounging to attend.
And then I had the gayest event
oh my God.
To go to last night.
You will not believe how insane every social media feed that I had was with pictures of that damn Robin concert.
Yeah, it was a Robin Breaks Up concert.
Every gay person that I know went to it.
My friend who tagged me in it, his comment with the tag on Facebook was, "Is there a tag all homosexuals button on Facebook?" This is Grant, who's been on the podcast before, actually.
Yeah, Grant, yeah. Friend of the podcast, Grant.
There is not a tag all homosexuals button, but it would if it had come in handy. It was last night.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I had to go to that. But anyway.
No, obviously.
But in delaying the podcast today,
we were able to bring you some terrible news.
We have the pleasure of bringing you awful SCOTUS news.
Yes. So it's the end of the SCOTUS term.
Well, they had like 30 cases that they had to rule on within like the last 2 weeks, yeah. Basically.
Yeah. Well, I think they're probably going on summer vacation.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Also, if I start coughing randomly, it's because I have
that's
weird cough.
A problem.
Everything's going wrong today, but we're just we're powering through.
Yeah, it's what we do.
So, in any case, the Supreme Court has ruled on like 1 trillion cases in the last week.
Mm-hmm.
Today was especially exciting because they ruled on 2 huge cases.
Yep.
Terrible news. The first one we're going to talk about is the Hobby Lobby case, which we've talked about in the past. Hobby Lobby is one of the many American businesses that is claiming that because there is this exemption for religious institutions to provide, you know, to not pay for birth control on their
health plans that they offer to their employees.
And just because they're also evil and just want this to be a thing, they want to be able to do the same thing and not offer birth control options as part of their health coverage.
Yeah.
This is a for-profit company. This is a crafting store that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
But Brent's heard of it.
I absolutely have.
It sounds like it belongs in the Midwest.
Yeah.
This is a store, by the way, who I would guess the customer base is almost entirely women.
Entirely women. Yes. Agreed. But the thing that you have to remember is that probably most of those women and most of the female employees, they're probably not having much sex.
They're probably also
the problem is
postmenopausal.
Right. The problem is the breadth of the ruling.
Yes.
In not so much in direct, you know, reference to Hobby Lobby, because none of those people need birth control in any way that are related to Hobby Lobby.
Right.
But there are
Americans that work for companies
that do.
And that is why this ruling is problematic.
Yes.
The courts, it was a 5-4 ruling, obviously, as all rulings always are. And basically the evil men on the court ruled that employers with religious objections can opt out of providing contraception coverage under Obamacare.
Yeah.
Now, the 4 liberal justices, all the women, you know, included, thought that was maybe a kind of bad precedent to set.
Yeah, think?
Ruth Bader Ginsburg had like a really widely publicized dissent that she wrote, and Sotomayor joined her on her dissent because it was like scathing.
Yeah.
Stephen Breyer and Elena Kagan didn't join on the same dissent, and they wrote a 1-paragraph dissent that was like, we should talk about this another time. Like, go fuck yourselves.
Come on.
It's in front of the Supreme Court. This is the time to talk about it.
Right.
If ever there was a time
right. You're Supreme Court justices. You just heard the case.
This is the time to talk about it. But obviously, this sort of means that any company that has a, quote, religious objection to any law, really, at all, can now has grounds to claim that they don't have to follow
right. It's
it.
a it's a it's a scary precedent.
It's a scary precedent. It's a scary precedent for literally every person.
Well, yeah, exactly. Because that's what, you know, a lot of
it doesn't have to just apply to women.
Right, because we're going to get to some other cases that do apply to women. So it seemed like women had a real bad go of it in the Supreme Court.
It's not a great week for women.
And they did. But the thing, at least about this particular case, is that this really is going to ultimately affect it's going to affect men at a certain point. I mean, you know, it's going to affect the LGBT community big time.
Sure.
Assuming
that this precedent gets upheld the way that people are kind of worst-case scenarioing it, obviously, I think... I think they're going to have to be careful about enforcing it this way, because basically what they just ruled is that any person for any cockamamie reason can think anything they want and then act, you know, can discriminate against anyone for any reason, which they have many laws on the books and many past rulings they confirm that you can't do that. But it's going to, it might be a bad thing for minorities. It might be a bad thing for the LGBT community. It might be a bad thing. It will be a bad thing for women because it's currently a bad thing for women because it started with a bad thing for women. I was actually a little pissed because Think Progress wrote an article about this that was almost exclusively devoted to talking about how terrible this is going to be for the LGBT community. And I was like, go fuck yourselves. This is like, this is terrible for women in the most direct way that something can be terrible for women. It was like, they were like, you know what? Everything's terrible for women. We don't need to worry about women anymore. They're screwed.
This is designed to be terrible
for
women.
It's an accident that it might be bad for gays, but it is real bad for women just on the face of it. And they were, I'm mad that Think Progress let their sort of big article about this be written by a man is what my real issue is, I think that that was probably, I think it was probably his concern. It was probably a gay man that wrote the thing. And he probably was like, shit, this is going to be real shitty for me, isn't it? But anyway, I was like, guys, I know it's been a bad week for women. We don't need to be that, you know, like we don't need to accept that women just are treated this way now. Yeah. Like, move on with their lives. In any case, oddly, as part of his ruling, Alito wrote the decision, and he said that there are other steps that the government can take to ensure that Hobby Lobby's employees have access to birth control, such as paying for it themselves. The government can pay for birth control for these people, which opens up another can of worms.
Yeah,
that can of worms being, why don't we just have a fucking single-payer plan?
Single-payer system,
because if anyone can reject any portion of any, you know, like, what if you work for an organization owned by Christian Scientists? Do you not get healthcare?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and at that point, should we pay for that? Probably. People need healthcare. But, should we have to subsidize the Christian Scientist vote, meanwhile we're having to pay out of pocket for our own health insurance? No. We shouldn't have to subsidize Hobby Lobby. Hobby Lobby's employees at some point are going to need birth control.
Yeah.
And if Americans are paying for it because they won't, then, like, why isn't the government paying for everyone's birth control?
Right. Well,
and that's not a bad thing. Why aren't they paying for everyone's everything?
No. I totally agree. The problem is that the government is not going to... We're
going to pass a law that says they can't do this.
Right. Well, and also, and we're far enough away from a single-payer system right now where the only way to fix this would be for the government to just basically, be the federal government to be subsidizing birth control. And that's just, that's a non-starter right now, anyway, basically. I mean, that's just not something that we're ready to do outside of what we've already done with Obamacare. Like, Obama can't just be like, free birth control for everyone.
As much as
he would like to.
I think that they're going to have to come up with a way to make that a thing.
Well, yeah.
Because the fallout for something like this could be so massive. And the thing is, birth control, first of all, everyone is pro-birth control, except for the Duggars. Catholics are pro-birth control.
Yeah.
Evangelical Christians are using birth control, even though they're not talking about it. Unless you're willing to have 19 children, you believe in birth control. So let's just say that first.
Correct.
Second of all, birth control is expensive, and birth control is good for society because nobody wants there to be massive numbers of unwanted babies and for women to not be able to do anything with their lives because anytime a man so much as touches them, they have to worry about getting pregnant. I mean...
Is that how that works?
Yes. Oh. According to Rush Limbaugh. I mean, I don't... according to Rush Limbaugh, you need more birth control to have more sex, remember?
Oh, that's right, yes.
Yeah. He doesn't understand how birth... And this, I feel like maybe conservatives also are missing an understanding.
Well,
they probably believe that having sex costs more money than not having sex on birth control. But also, there's other indications for birth control. People use it for acne. People use it for other things. So, this is just annoying on the face of it. But birth control is good for society. Ultimately, I think birth control literally changed America and the world. I mean... The 60s happened partially because of birth control. And so I don't think that this can, stay this way. I don't think that we can live in a society where tons of companies are not providing birth control and there's no other alternative, because Hobby Lobby is not the only company that has a suit like this going on right now.
No.
There are 71 of these cases and 46 of them are still pending. Like,
right.
That's well, some real banana town bonkers.
It wasn't just Hobby Lobby in this
no.
case either. There were like,
no.
what, there were like 30 other companies.
Right, Hobby Lobby was sort of the most high profile.
Right.
But there are other of these cases still being heard.
Yeah.
There are tons of them working their way through the courts right now, because everyone now thinks that they, because the churches don't have to provide. This is why I think it was a mistake. I mean,
I
obviously this is why, I thought of
yeah.
that. Like, that was my brilliant plan. Everyone knows this is why it was a mistake to give an exemption to churches. Churches
yeah.
can go screw themselves. As we've pointed out many times, many of them are operating like for-profit entities anyway.
Yeah.
But beyond that, this is, there are tons of these cases that are still going to have to be decided, and this is a terrible precedent to
right.
set for those.
Well, and also, I mean, I'm curious, just, is it cheaper for Hobby Lobby to offer plans
probably
that
not.
Don't... Probably
How
not.
How could it
okay.
be?
I
mean,
know, because...
They're just... It's not like they are providing health insurance through their own health insurance company.
Right.
They're, like, calling Blue Cross,
right.
and now they're having to call and make an extra phone call to be like, we want to have the exact same plans as everyone else, minus birth control.
Right, minus birth control.
How much yeah. cheaper is that? Probably not much cheaper.
Right.
Not much cheaper. And, like, and, you know, they're not going to compensate their employees more. In, you know, for having lost
no,
this benefit.
Obviously.
Like, this is yeah. why we have something like Obamacare in place, people.
It just seems like such an...
So infuriating.
It's infuriating, just, I mean, on so many levels, but it also just seems like such an odd thing to, like, even if you are a religious sort of, if you have religious beliefs
then
as, like, an owner
control.
Of a company, like, I just, to sort of, like, inflict this on the people who work for you is just, it's such a weird mindset to get yourself in, that, like, that you're so furious over the fact that, like, you might be offering health insurance to that supplies birth control to someone. It's just so
this
bizarre.
This is making
it's
me really, hate I capitalism again.
I can't process it. Like, I just don't even
get
it.
I might go
it.
Back to being a communist. I was a communist for a while. I liked
I know.
It.
Yeah, screw it.
Yeah. Like, screw it. Like, this is just a bunch of, like, in my mind, this may be wrong, it's a bunch of, like, sort of, like, mini Napoleon complex style dictator bosses. It's the world's asshole bosses.
I could see that.
Who are, like, some really, like, obnoxious pig who, like, you know, slaps the asses of women in his office and whatever, and then
yeah.
on the same token, won't provide birth control.
Yeah. Probably. Sounds
you know.
About right.
Meanwhile, the Huffington Post was all over the story of Hobby Lobby's 401k investments, which are
right.
heavily invested in a lot of companies that produce a lot of the things that they're not willing to cover for
right.
their own employees.
Like IUDs, the morning after pills.
Yeah.
yeah.
They hold funds that invest in Teva Pharmaceuticals and Pfizer.
Right. Teva Pharmaceuticals
they make
Plan
B.
Plan B.
And Paragard, which is an IUD.
Yeah.
And Pfizer makes abortion-inducing drugs and... every other drug that's made in the world, so I assume also birth control.
Probably, yes.
So, in any case, and they also invest in health insurance companies that provide abortions. They, like, they're profiting from...
They're being a little disingenuous, is what
we're
saying.
A little disingenuous, yeah. They're profiting from people using birth control. They just won't allow their own employees
right.
to do it. Second ruling for today...
Yes.
...was in Harris versus Quinn, which was a case that was brought... By basic okay, here's what happened. It was
this
basically
case.
Brought by an anti-union group. But what they did was they found a group of employees who had been unionized. They were sort of semi-private. They're home health care aides that are
right.
provide. You know, they're paid through Medicare a lot of the time. But so they're
right.
sort of semi-private because they're paid with public funds, but they're a private contractor.
Right, exactly.
They voted to unionize,
yes.
and obviously, as often happens when people vote to do things, not every single member. Voted to unionize,
right?
But a majority voted
right.
to unionize.
So then, all the people who were sort of like part of this kind of like, you know, I mean, all, they were being forced to pay the union dues, which
right.
is what happens.
Yeah. So
when
what happens
when
you vote to unionize, even if you voted against it, you have to pay union dues because you're benefiting from the collective bargaining that the union's doing.
Right.
So this anti-union group came around and found a few, like a couple people who like didn't vote for the union,
right, who voted against it,
and
yeah.
got them to. Sue, basically, so that, they, you know, because they're being forced to pay these dues. Because the way that all unions work, in especially in the public sector, in a lot of the private sector as well, is that whether or not you're a member of the union, you pay union dues because you're benefiting from their bargaining and they have overhead costs
yeah.
to doing this bargaining for you. In this case, I believe It was SEIU, I think, that was trying to unionize them. But their wages went up significantly after the union came in and their benefits improved. So, like, there was a sort of unquestionable improvement to their compensation after the union came in.
But they had to pay dues.
But they were forcing everyone to pay dues. Yeah. So the worst case scenario for this case was people were worried that the judges would outlaw forcing non-members to pay dues, period. Which, for public sector unions, would be a disaster.
Yeah.
And public sector employees are sort of the most heavily unionized workforce in America. And that's sort of... They really do need collective bargaining because they are bargaining with the government. They're bargaining with a much bigger entity than them. Yep. It's not just like some asshole boss. So,
right.
So that was concerning. What they ended up ruling is that unions that are for private and semi-private employees, like these contract Medicaid workers and people that are in just the plain private sector, can't be compelled to pay these union dues.
Right.
But public sector, they left public sector unions alone.
It's still a huge problem.
Still a huge problem. My parents are split on how big a problem it is. My dad's furious. My mom is like, well, it could have been worse.
It could have. There's a few cases that we're going to talk about, this being one of them, that could have been worse.
Yeah.
Considering the makeup of this court.
It was an interesting case, though, because the whole issue was framed as like a First Amendment issue by Scalia. So there was a lot of concern that his ruling, if he had actually like outlawed people being compelled to pay these dues because it was sort of, because it was affecting their First Amendment rights to like talk to their employer on a direct basis or something like that, would have ended up basically making it impossible to enforce any workplace regulation at all. They steered clear of that. They were
trying to
trying to be real careful about that. But it is a really bad precedent. It's very damaging to unions, especially. And what bothers me the most about this, I think, is that SEIU is one of the most active and effective private sector and semi-public sector unions.
Yeah.
I mean, they represent people on, you know, in healthcare field. So they represent a lot of different kinds of employees. But they're a union that's like a really active, productive, like progressive union.
Yeah.
Unlike a lot of unions these days, which are kind of shitty and act like corporations.
Yeah.
And this will really hurt them because this is sort of their niche market, if you will.
Yeah.
These sort of like contract, these healthcare contract workers. So I'm worried about that because they're a good union and I don't want to see them get screwed and go out of business. I don't know if you go to business as a union, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I'm happy that public sector unions are intact. I'm worried because Brent and I work in an industry with a lot of private sector unions, and I don't know how this affects their ability to operate. Because Hollywood is a very heavily unionized town. And it needs to be because it's the most exploitive of industries.
Very true.
And it's, you know, it's all contract work.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all sort of freelancers, basically. Yeah. So it's important that it stay unionized. I don't know what the impact is going to be on Hollywood and the world, you know, the auto workers. Like, there's a lot of unions out there that you don't want to see get screwed.
Yeah.
While reading about this case.
Yeah, this is fascinating.
Yes. I happened upon a mention of a previous case, because they were talking about First Amendment issues, because there was a lot of questions about how far the First Amendment really takes you in this case, because Scalia had been asking a lot of First Amendment-y type questions, and he seemed to be indicating that he was basing his ruling on the First Amendment in this case.
Yeah.
So there was a reference to an earlier case from 1943, which was the case that determined that public school students can't be forced to recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
I know, which Lila told me earlier today. She was like, I figured out how to get the Pledge of Allegiance into the podcast tonight, and I was
exciting about that ruling.
Tricky, but good work.
Yeah, no, I'm going for it. It's exciting because that ruling was decided before Under God was added to the Pledge of Allegiance. So they added Under God after they had already decided that you couldn't make anyone say it. So maybe at that point they were like, screw it. We'll put anything we want into it. Doesn't matter. But in any case, this was somebody who sued the West Virginia State Board of Education.
Yes, West Virginia.
So West Virginia is exactly where this would happen. But if you were wondering, high school listeners out there, you cannot be forced to say the Pledge of Allegiance. It is unconstitutional.
That's right.
You have the right to refuse.
Back to women getting screwed.
Back to women getting screwed.
back to another.
We're going to keep coming back to that.
Yeah, that's it's a theme of the week.
It's a theme of the week. Yeah.
So another case that was being heard was this case about an abortion clinic buffer zone. Basically, in the state of Massachusetts, there's a 35-foot buffer zone for protesters at abortion clinics, basically to allow, yeah, you know, people who are going in and out of the abortion clinic
to not be harassed.
Getting harassed.
And as we all know, that's a problem in abortion clinics. So that's why that was important.
Getting harassed and or killed even sometimes.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Doctors, patients. The problem. Yeah. You can't win.
So, anyway, it was actually overturned, and it was overturned, I believe it was 5-4, but all 9 judges did actually side on the fact that this was unconstitutional, which was interesting. But what happened, this was an example of one of the other cases that could have been a lot worse, right, in the sense that what happened was Justice Roberts sort of, like, didn't want to turn it into, like, a free-for-all, basically, right, where, like,
they understood that there were larger implications, right, like, that would directly impact people's safety.
Right, exactly. So basically what happened was was joined by the liberal justices, John Roberts was, and basically it sort of, like, sides with the free speech, you know, folks, but also gave
it gives law enforcement the power to sort of make arrests and otherwise monitor the activities,
right,
of protesters,
exactly,
so that they are not, like, killing women or,
right,
potentially
or
grabbing
just,
them,
like,
and
right up in their grill, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I don't know, you know, my only concern about that is that then leaves, you know, in states where law enforcement is not particularly sensitive to these issues, that leaves a lot in their hands.
Right.
I mean, you want to trust law enforcement. In Massachusetts, I would trust law enforcement, but I don't know that I would in Kansas. So,
yeah, exactly.
Because Kansas is the kind of place you want a buffer zone around an abortion clinic.
Yeah.
But at the same time, as a seasoned protester, I'm sort of like, all right, what troubles me is that you need, like, all of these crazy permits to, like, go have an anti-war protest, but apparently, like, any person can just be up in anyone's grill at an abortion clinic,
right,
with no problem.
Right. You know, Justice Scalia sort of, the four conservative justices would have gone way further.
Yes.
And he even said that he would have gone so far as to declare unconstitutional any laws that restrict abortion-opposing speech on public streets and sidewalks. So, which would have gone basically all the way in.
Well,
just
that
really
would have also been. I mean, there are plenty of laws that restrict other kinds of speech on the sidewalk.
Yeah, sure.
So, like, you know, I mean, that's
He's terrible. In
a world in which there is a precedent of violent action being the result of these words.
Yeah,
I feel like it's like yelling fire in a theater is not legal for a reason.
Yeah,
it's because that's a public safety issue. Like,
right,
abortion protests are a public safety issue, unfortunately.
Yeah, they are.
So that sucks. In good news, police cannot search your cell phone without a warrant anymore.
Yeah, this was like a big smackdown. This was 9-0.
It shows that they almost understand the internet.
It shows that, like, once these 9 people are all coming together around something, like, you know that it's a bad idea.
Yeah. Like, this is not something that should have been happening.
So, they, you now need a warrant to, for police to be able to search your cell phones.
Right. Because it used to be that there's, like, a certain amount of stuff that if it's just, like, out in the open, the police are allowed to search.
Right.
And so for a while, because cell phones were just, like, random items that did nothing but make calls, they were searching people's cell phones. Now that your cell phone has all your personal information and every piece of communication you've ever made.
Right. Part of your, you know, that's a breach of your digital privacy, basically. There's this whole sort of, like, sense of what your digital privacy is now, as, you know, similarly to just sort of like what your, you know, your things are. And so,
that's
good.
Good news.
That's a good one.
Then there was this TV, like this company on the internet that was like intercepting TV signals.
Yeah, it's
and
called
like
Aereo. And basically
them.
What it was is it gave you your own sort of satellite, but it wasn't a satellite that you hooked up to your TV. It was sort of like a transmitter to like a satellite that then sort of like sent you a signal or something. I don't even really.
Whatever it is, I'm against this ruling because Time Warner Cable was for it.
Right.
And I'm against everything that Time Warner Cable was for.
Yeah. But it was a 6-3 decision, and basically they've already shut down.
Yeah.
And this was Aereo
no longer exists.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Aereo. So it was a way, I think, of circumventing the cable networks who pay fees to different, you know, they pay specific fees to get networks onto their list.
They
and Aereo was basically going around that.
Right.
And so it was free for them because they were basically like hijacking the signal.
Yeah.
But also like screw you, Time Warner, because you're charging too much money.
Yeah.
So like go fuck yourself.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, the final big decision.
Yes.
Had to do with recess appointments.
Right. And this goes back to a case that was brought against the Obama administration because when he was trying to get some people nominated to the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, and the Consumer Protection Bureau, which the Republicans hate, they were blocking every single nominee that he had. This goes back to sort of like the Elizabeth Warren age of when he, you know, I mean,
right, when he wanted her to be the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
And they were not having any of it at all. They were literally just going to like let these agencies die due to not having anybody able to be run them.
That was literally their plan, because they literally wanted these agencies
to die. So Obama was basically like, well, I'm going to do some recess appointments because I have the ability to do that. And it was when during a time when Congress was supposed to be in recess for like 20 days. Right. Well, what Congress did at that time was every 3 days, they sent some schmuck to gavel in, you know, the Senate or the House or whatever, just to be in
session,
to be in session.
So that they would never be in recess.
But Obama, while they were not doing this, like on one of the days that they weren't there, nominated some people to the National Labor Relations Board anyway and said, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Turns out that was unconstitutional.
Apparently you can't do that.
So that's too bad.
That was another 9-0 one. So apparently that's also a really bad idea. But the interesting thing that they said, though, was that they sort of all agreed that recess appointments are something that the president should have the ability to do, but you can't be doing it. They sort of like all reference the fact that like a lot of there's a lot of precedents where laws have been passed during times where like the Senate has been called in on one of these sort of like pro forma sessions.
Right.
So like if they're technically in session, even if they're doing it just to
piss
jack
you off,
your nominees,
you can't do it.
Yeah, they have to really be in session. It doesn't get rid of recess appointments.
Right. It only
is still the president's power to make a recess appointment. They just have to actually be in recess.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about this, though, is that now it's sort of like not that big of a deal because since this case was brought and heard, the Democrats sort of like went into the whole
filibuster reform, and this is what it affects.
And this is what it affects. It affects his judicial nominees, not to the Supreme Court, but all of his other, and people to head up like things like the National Labor Relations Board. So, and they don't need 60 votes now.
Right.
So, since they're in, I mean, it may affect, you know, somebody at some point, like who doesn't have a majority.
Right. It may affect us in a year.
Right. Exactly.
We don't know.
Right. But at least
as of this exact moment, it's not a huge deal.
Yes. Not that big of a deal. So we'll see how that.
And also, it's not a huge deal in a world in which everyone is being even minorly civil.
Well, that's
it. Only comes up if everyone's being insane assholes.
Yeah, totally.
And sort of relevant to this, because this is another example of Obama just doing shit because no one else is doing it.
Yeah.
Boehner has been talking a lot of smack because he's got some cockamamie plan to like file a lawsuit against the Obama administration for using so many executive actions. Because you know how Obama's always passing executive actions.
Yeah. Well, he said in his State of the Union address like 6-8 months ago or whatever that he was going to do this. He was like, if Congress continues to not
do a damn thing,
then I'm going to do whatever I can within the law to, you know, take
he's been passing a lot of executive actions that just apply to federal contractors but are meant to sort of, you know, encourage change.
Right.
You know, and that sort of thing. So Boehner's not feeling great about that.
No.
He's decided he wants to file a lawsuit against the Obama administration.
If he's making sure the president is doing nothing, then he thinks that's how it should stay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's his job. He's ruling America currently by
not doing anything. Yeah.
He's the guy that stops everything from happening. It only takes one guy, apparently. This guy. But in any case, so he claims that he's not trying to impeach Obama, just that he's trying to sort of show them what's what.
Well, and there's no precedent for this at all. It's never been done. He hasn't given any sort of there's no inclination as to how this is going to work.
Right. No one knows what the mechanics of this plan are.
He didn't mention any specific things. I mean, I think that we sort of like all know.
We know.
But like there's no one specific thing that he has done that anybody can sort of like agree has been beyond the reach of what he's
allowed to do. Well, that's the thing. None of the executive actions have been expansive enough to really constitute breaking the law.
Right. It's not as if he just sort of was like, all immigrants can now freely cross the border now, or, you know,
he had a lot of nerve after the Bush administration did this just to actively piss off an effective Congress.
Well, yeah.
Because signing statements were a real specialty of George Bush's. He was signing up a storm, making up random shit and doing everything by executive action.
Yeah.
He wasn't passing anything through Congress, because Congress was like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, Stop yourselves, right. GOP.
But Obama's not
caring. He's calling it a stunt.
He said this is a stunt. But what I've told Speaker Boehner directly is, if you're really concerned about me taking too many executive actions, why don't you try getting something done through Congress? And then my favorite one, he said, I'm not going to apologize for trying to do something while they're doing nothing.
Yeah, and he shouldn't.
Nope, he should not.
It's not his problem. Nope. I mean, it's his problem, but it's not his problem, you know.
Yeah.
More primary results.
Some great,
right?
Primary results. Yeah. Actually, well, I mean, I don't know if they're great, but I mean, like,
exciting.
Some interesting ones.
Some interesting
primary
results.
We talked about
results.
This last week, yeah. As things that were happening this week. And Charlie Rangel barely won his primary. We knew that one was going to be close. It's the same guy that he ran against in 2012, which I guess I didn't even realize. And it was also close.
I knew this guy's name.
Right.
That's
we
why,
still don't know his name.
No, it's... We know how to spell it. We think we're going to call him Espayat from now on.
Yeah,
that's what I've heard it said like three different ways because no one knows how to say it. Here's a problem: if you're going to have a double L in your name, no one's going to know how to say it.
I know.
It's like vaguely French sounding, but like also maybe Spanish. Like it's hard to know.
Yeah.
In any case, Rangel won. This is going to be his 23rd term. He's running unopposed now, so...
Right, there's no Republican in the race. They're
smooth sailing to the...
smart of the Republicans.
Right.
there's no hope for them there.
Harlem
it's
the
Harlem district. I mean...
Harlem is not going to elect a Republican just to get Rangel out of it.
No. But he's held the same seat since 1971.
Yeah.
That's nuts. He's claimed that this is going to be his last term. He claimed that the last time.
Right. Now,
as well.
He's... get a Strom Thurmond his way through.
He totally is. Yeah.
I mean,
he's
84,
I think, right? Isn't that how old he is?
He's probably just a guy who doesn't have anything better to do.
No.
Well, he's amassed some power and authority and probably has a nice life.
Yeah. It's so crazy, though, because this was another very close race. He ended up winning by, I think 3 or 4 percentage points, but it was only a couple thousand votes. And Espayat didn't want to concede, and he didn't concede until
because
a couple days later.
There were
and
absentee
was,
votes still
it was
coming
so
in.
Close. Like, when Rangel came out to give his speech, he ended up talking for 45 minutes because he came out when 90% of the vote was in and came out on stage and all of his supporters were there. And then he basically carried on a conversation about himself and about the race and was asking his advisors in public there, whether it was too early for him to declare victory. And so he was there for 45 minutes. He talked about it. He talked about his life. It was it was not so much a speech as it was just sort of him espousing on about just a bunch of random things. And then at one point the stage cracked under the weight of all of his fat people that he had on the stage with him, his entourage basically. So he kindly asked all the heavy people to get off of the stage, which is just too amazing.
One thing that I kind of like about Rangel's office is that when you go lobby places on the Hill or go talk to people on the Hill, you always are talking to a bunch of 23-year-olds who don't know what's going on and don't care and give you a glazed over look they're a bored teenager and you're annoying them on their way to the fridge or something. And you go to his office and it's a bunch of old New Yorkers that are sitting in there. They're really direct. You can yell at them. They'll yell at you. Everyone wins. It's because they've all been with him for years.
Well, and I don't know if this is your experience or what you've heard, but I actually heard a story on NPR because one of the reasons why his district has become so close, beside the fact that he's had some ethics problems and he's 1,000 years old, is this district has changed a little bit.
Yeah.
Just it's got a lot more, it has a lot more Hispanics in it now, and Espayat is Hispanic, so that is one of the reasons why this has become so close. But
it's gotten a lot whiter,
right? And and I heard a story on NPR talking about just covering this and talking to people in his district, and what everyone collectively said was that you can go into his office and you can get help and you can be treated.
That's how he's kept this seat for so long.
Right, is that he's good to
his constituents. He plays local politics really well.
That's what you should do.
He's
your local representative. I mean, he's in Washington, but he is supposed to represent you. So I liked that. I don't know much about him.
Even as all of these ethics charges came down or whatever, I felt for the most part, a lot of New Yorkers did not have terribly negative feelings about him. You know, when I went to his office, to lobby for the 9/11 health bill. He doesn't have a lot of 9/11 victims in his district. His office didn't ultimately need to care that much, and they didn't really. But they were very direct with me about what, you know, they were listen, this isn't something that we're going to come out in front on because we don't have a lot of 9/11 victims in our district and blah, blah, blah. And I was able to have a really direct conversation. I spoke to somebody who actually knew what was going on. They didn't siphon me off to some intern or whatever. I spoke to their chief legal counsel. It was a guy in his 50s who knew the game and was really good about not just explaining sort of issues to me, but also explaining strategic politics to me and what they, you know, what I needed to actually do.
Yeah.
And so, like, I feel like that's his office. He's a bumbling random person who just wanders around, like, pointing at things or whatever. Yeah. But his staff is pretty good.
Yeah.
Which I feel like that's how you keep your seat for that long.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you become an institution. You know, you're going to have ethics issues probably after you've amassed that kind of power and you're the head of the Ways and Means Committee for that long. Exactly. But, like, I think in his district, he's sort of like, he knows how to play that game really well.
Yeah.
And his staff is good at explaining how to get things done to people, which most offices go out of their way to make sure you can't understand how to get anything done.
And a lot of them
so
just
they don't have to do anything.
A lot of them don't know.
Yeah. Well, too. I mean, when you're talking to a bunch of 23-year-olds,
right.
It's like,
what the hell do they know?
They don't know. They don't
how
know
to game the system.
No, exactly.
No.
You know who knows? The
Charlie
Rangel. 50-something-year-old chief legal counsel for Charlie Rangel. He's probably been with him for 30 years.
Yeah.
He knows. Yep. He's a guy who knows.
He's a knower.
He's a knower.
That's right. Okay, and the other one.
Oh, my God.
This is just rich. This is really probably the best story of the week, actually.
Yeah.
But it's not the biggest one, so it's...
If we could have led with this, this would have right, been the
exactly.
one to lead with.
So, as you know, it was the Mississippi runoff against Thad Cochran and... McDaniel.
Is it McDaniel?
Oh, who knows?
It's McDaniel. His last name is McDaniel.
Yeah, anyway. So, as you know, they had a primary already, and it was insanely close. So, they had to have a runoff. And most people thought that McDaniel was probably going to win because less people vote in the runoff, more of the crazies come out of the woodwork to vote in the runoff.
He's the crazy candidate.
McDaniel was the crazy candidate. So, everybody sort of like felt like maybe that he was going to win. Well,
it was gonna be an Eric Cantor style upset, not quite as upsetty, but like it was gonna be a major upset.
Right, exactly.
Thad Cochran.
So Thad Cochran, in the latter stages of the campaign leading up into the runoff, really enlisted the help of African American voters in Mississippi, which is an interesting
thing
choice on his part that ended up working, and also sort of an interesting choice on the African American voters who may have helped him. Although we'll get to in
to
a second,
how
I heard
that
a pretty good reasoning as to why they did that from an
African
American woman who I
this is
heard
a district
explain this to
like
me.
Charlie Rangel's district that doesn't necessarily have an opposed race,
right? Exactly. So
in a meaningful
sense, a state.
Yeah. It's not really a meaningfully opposed race.
No,
so.
It's not. Democrats were sort of secretly, I think, hoping that maybe they could run somebody against McDaniel if he was crazy enough in the sort of like Todd Akin style. But like, even if that was the case,
that,
like you're probably going
to
end
up,
it's a hard seat to pick up. Like, it's sort of like one of those seats where like, if the crazy person wins the primary, then you're just going to get stuck with the crazy person winning because that's who wins.
Things only get crazier
like
Mississippi.
Exactly.
They don't ever get more sane.
Right. So, basically, after Cochran asked black voters to help him, McDaniel flew off the handle, which probably was not the way to go because it probably just drove more black people to the polls. Because at that point, he then called for poll watchers to come in, as if it was like the freaking 60s or 50s or whatever it was to
we need to make sure that black people aren't voting.
Yeah, they didn't want the black people to go vote in the Republican primary because they're obviously not Republicans.
Like,
and that was so after. It became clear that he was going to lose later that night and into the next day. He really flipped his shit and was like, the Republican Party has been corrupted by this. Like, this is not what we should, you know, I mean, like, it was liberal Democrats that decided this race and, like, really had a sort of public meltdown in a pretty fantastical way.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, though, because when McDaniel flew off the handle and talked about sending poll observers, Cochran responded and said, I think it's important for everybody to participate. Voting rights has been an issue of great importance in Mississippi. People have really contributed a lot of energy and effort to make sure the political process is open to everyone. So, after all the black people went and voted for him after he had said this...
People were maybe expecting...
They then thought maybe he would support Congress doing something about the Voting Rights Act, which the Supreme Court basically sent back to Congress.
Exactly.
Doesn't seem to be really into that. So, the black people helped him win his seat back in the Senate, but he... doesn't have any designs to be helping them anytime in the near future.
No, of course not. It's people like him continue to get elected. Well, no, I mean, it's interesting because I feel like actually the Voting Rights Act, sort of the special attention that it gives to a lot of these states that are in the grips of crazy people all the time is sort of helpful to people like Thad Cochran because it's, as we've learned, a district or a state can be too conservative. Eric Cantor taught us
that he drove... that
the safer you, you make your district too safe, and suddenly, so if you,
the easier it is for the nutbags to come out.
Exactly. So if you're in Mississippi and you've suddenly decided that you're going to pass some law that prevents black people from voting effectively, and the Supreme Court and, you know, Congress aren't going to do anything about it, you're probably going to end up with a McDaniel ultimately. You're not going to end up keeping your sort of stately old bumbling idiot.
Right.
Which is the kind of plan that people like Thad Cochran have, is to just continue to be there.
Well, and I think the way that I heard this explained best to me, because I know that when you and I were talking about this after we found out sort of how this whole thing got, you know, shook out, is that you and I sort of were having trouble understanding why African Americans did go and vote in this race and did vote for McDaniel, when we sort of, I think the conventional wisdom was like that you would vote for the crazy person and maybe try and beat them. But I think I heard on Real Time with Bill Maher this week, I heard Joy Reid, who's an African American, who's a host on MSNBC, sort of explain this really well. And you and I have talked about this a lot, but Mississippi takes more money in from the federal government than any other state. I mean, I think
they're the most in the red.
They're the most in the red. And those are all, that money is going to programs that are being used by African Americans. I mean, they're going to they're going to food stamp programs, and those are, and it's not as if that's a bad thing. It's just that we're only saying that they're in the red because
Mississippi, most impoverished state in the union.
Right, they're the most impoverished state in the union. It's not we're not advocating for these programs being bad, but like they are going to African Americans in the state mostly, and for they sort of realize that when you have McDaniel, who's a crazy Tea Partier, who basically wants to go to Washington
to end all programs
and basically like shut down the federal government, and yes, Thad Cochran is a wacko Republican nutbag himself, but like when you're faced with wacko nutbag who isn't in favor of, you know, cutting off every program that you might be using.
Right. Who is sort of silently accepting the status quo in a way that someone like McDaniel, who would go in there to be a reformer, would not do.
You vote for Thad Cochran.
Yeah.
And that's what they did.
Yeah.
And God bless them for it.
You don't have a lot of great options in Mississippi.
Yeah.
That's not a state filled with great plans.
No,
great
the lesser of two evils is still
all
pretty
there is
fucking
in Mississippi.
Evil. That's all there is, and they're still pretty bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, you gotta go with it.
You gotta go
Basically. But it really brought out a lot of ugly racial things going on in the South, which is not shocking, I guess. But I mean, you know, Rush Limbaugh said that Cochran won because of black Uncle Tom voters.
Right.
I mean, you saw all of these Tea Party leaders there sort of really railing on about like how black people, you know, it was as if they really wanted black people to not be voting at all.
Which
is
what
they want.
So that's exactly why they felt
so
it sounded that way.
Just in and of itself,
at least
really
they now have someone representing
them
who needs them to vote.
That's very true.
I mean, at the very least, that's literally the least you can say about anything that could even be a little glimmer of hope in Mississippi.
Yeah, exactly.
But the choice is literally between somebody who like is trying to prevent African American voters from making it to the polls and somebody who's realized that he needs them.
Yeah,
like terrible. Yeah. Mississippi is terrible.
I think that, you know, because it was groups like, you know, the NAACP and some of these other groups that were the ones who were right after this was over with kind of lobbying Cochran to sort of, you know, help them with the Voting Rights Act
situation.
And they should stay on him.
Yeah.
I mean, don't just because now he's back off to Washington and you helped him win, just let him have his day in the sun. I mean, you helped the man to make him. I mean, that's how politics works.
Exactly.
Like
it's back scratching.
When a constituency does something for you,
you do something for them.
You give them a kickback.
Mm-hmm.
That's what politics is. It's kickbacks.
Kickbacks. Just corrupt kickbacks.
That's it. That's all it is.
Bribery and kickbacks.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, speaking of the Cochran race, the guy who had we talked a little bit about this race. There's a Tea Party official who had been conspiring to take photos of Cochran's wife because she's in a nursing home.
Right.
His name was Mark Mayfield.
Right.
And he... She's
had dementia for, like,
right, she's
a long
had dementia
time.
For a long time.
There,
she's
in
bad shape.
Like, 2011. Or 2001, I think, actually. Yeah, so...
He committed suicide after the results came down.
Oof. Yeah.
He was found in his garage.
Yeah, he was facing a felony charge for doing that. Of up to 5 years.
And his guy lost. Bad day.
His guy lost. It was a bad day. So, yeah, he was found in his garage with a gun.
Really dramatic Tea Party people.
Really? I know, right? Like, I mean, was it really that bad? I mean, Oh God, the black people won.
Right, had to kill themselves. Like now we have Thad Cochran again.
Yeah, I know, right? Right? Like, who's like 1,000 years old and who's been your senator?
It's not like they ended up with Charlie Rangel. Like, what is this problem?
I know, totally.
Meanwhile, Matt Lauer.
Oh God.
Was interviewing the Mary Barra, who's the CEO of GM.
Right.
The CEO that they brought in so that GM could fall apart and they could blame women. and asked her. This is on the Today Show. You're a mom, I mentioned. 2 kids. You said in an interview not long ago that your kids told you that they're going to hold you accountable for one job, and it's being a mom. She said, correct. So he asked, given the pressures of this job at General Motors, can you do both well?
Okay.
You know who's never in the history of the world been asked whether or not they can effectively do a job and raise their kids?
A male CEO. A man,
yep. Period.
Yes, right, exactly, that's true.
Matt Lauer, nope. Who has 3 kids and has never been asked whether he can tolerate the intense travel schedule that his job requires. I was going to
say, he once did a segment called Where in the World is Matt Lauer, where he was basically probably didn't see his family for a year.
Yeah.
Nobody was asking him how his children were doing.
No, whether he was effectively taking care of them. No one was concerned about his parenting abilities.
Nope.
But mysteriously, the CEO of GM has has big shoes to fill of the parental variety because she's a woman.
Yep.
And women are supposed to raise children.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to be in the workplace.
Nope.
He got a lot of criticism for this, as you might imagine. And he was like, well, I would have asked a man the same question. I would like him to point to one time that he's interviewed a male CEO and asked them that question.
Well, I think what his reasoning was, which, I mean, look, you still just don't ask this question. I sort of get his reasoning on some level because he was referencing this quote that her kids were going to hold her to that. So I think that he was sort of like throwing back to that. But still, it's just, it was not, as Hillary Clinton would say, artfully worded.
It was not artfully worded. It was also not an artful sentiment.
No, it wasn't.
Of course. And especially in this particular climate. I think 2 years ago he could have asked this and people would have been like, that's right, woman.
I know.
This has been a year where we've had to start thinking about a lot of these issues more concretely. We've thought about them in terms of how the press has covered Hillary Clinton's burgeoning candidacy. Uh-huh. We've talked about it in terms of how sexism impacted Jill Abramson's firing. We've had a lot of time to think about the way, not just the way that women are treated differently in the workplace, but the way that women are discussed, women, you know, working is discussed differently. The language that we use to discuss women in the workplace being different. Well,
and it's really been, you mentioned those few things, and even just sort of like, you know, we've got the sort of, what's her name from Facebook doing the whole, like, lean in
thing. Oh, yeah.
You've got
Sheryl Sandberg.
And there's also, even just recently, there's some, have you seen these TV spots that have been going around? Yes. That everybody's been posting? There's the whole thing with, like, what it means to be a girl, and how that sort of, like,
right, and how
how that's, like, a learned trait, basically. It's just this spot for, people I can't say, remember, you know, it's talk like for about, either, like, Pantene or for it's a weird sort of like branded for commercial some, basically but I mean like and
no but this so is a like, trendy idea at the
it's
moment.
A trendy idea finally. And there's also the one about with why do women apologize all the time mm-hmm. that's there's that one that's going
well,
on
there's
that
there's
is
sort
again
of a zeitgeist
I think
that's for like a, you know there,
one of them is like for I think one of them
well of course there's always a tampon commercial
yeah exactly coming.
But you know there's a blog that has recently become sort of big again. It was big for a while. It's basically pictures of men taking up more physical space on the subway. Like, it's just men sitting with their legs splayed everywhere and women, like, cowering in their seats with their legs crossed on the subway. But there's, like, a lot of discussion about this topic at this very moment.
Yeah.
One of the things that has been frustrating about the way that the press has covered this CEO situation at GM in the first place is has been that there's sort of this distinct sense that they, like, brought her in to fail.
Yeah.
So that they could be like, women, what are you going to do? And then bring a man back in to fix
things.
Yeah,
exactly. It's like they brought her in just in time to, like, go in front of Congress to, like, have to defend GM, like, basically killing a bunch of people because they didn't properly recall their cars.
So this was maybe a time for Matt Lauer to have thought a little bit about what's going on in the world, what people are interested in hearing and not hearing.
Or at least fucking apologize after you screw it up.
But that's the other thing. Like, I get it. Matt Lauer is a person who was raised in an American society where this is the question that you ask women and don't ask men.
Yep.
Like, learn something from it.
Right.
Like, just be a guy who can learn from it.
Yep.
Be like, I'm sorry.
It's not who he
is. I would like to think I would have asked a man the same question. The truth is I probably wouldn't have.
Yeah.
And that's a problem that we should all be thinking about.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just me that has this problem. This is a larger problem. Like, he could have blamed everyone else in the world.
Yep.
No.
Nope.
Fucking women getting the shaft.
Big time.
Left, right, and center.
Gay's not getting the shaft.
No.
Well, they're getting the shaft in the sense that two more states that you don't want to get gay married in, you can.
Right.
Now.
Yeah. Not that if you're gay, I mean, don't get married in Utah or Indiana.
Or Indiana.
Like, just those are both. You shouldn't be going to those states. Just no. If you're a person with taste, that's another time you shouldn't go to either of those states, most likely.
Yeah, but you can if you want.
Congrats.
If you so desire to do
so. Proving, once again, that the best way to get gay marriage legalized in your state is to pass a ban.
Yep. Well, every single state that has a ban now has
a challenge.
A challenge. To it. Yeah. They finally have dug up all the couples they need to get a challenge going in the state.
That's all you need to get gay marriage legalized in the state, is you need to have banned it in the first place.
You and I have been saying this for years.
A long time.
Long time before people realized
that. If you don't want gay marriage, don't say a thing about it. just ignore it. Right. Pretend it's not happening. Just close your eyes and put a pillow over your head and like don't even think about it.
Right. You're fine. At least for a while.
For a while, you can... Smooth sailing, no gay marriage.
Float on through.
Just, you know, keep on with the status quo. No one will say a thing. So they'll be too busy thinking about how Utah went out of their way to ban gay marriage, and then also mysteriously tried to ban it in California. and that
successfully both times.
And that's a good reason to bring a court case up against them.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So meanwhile, it's time for Hillary. Hillary just can't catch a break. Right now.
She really can't. Well, being
with good reason, because she's been terrible in public on this book tour and has really just made a mockery of herself.
Right. Well, being the poor person that she is, it's hard for
her. It's hard. She relies on speaking fees to put food on the table.
Right. The $225,000 speaking fees.
Yeah.
Well, apparently the students at UNLV, where she's set to speak at, are not having it.
Not
really into it.
Well, here's something that's happening to them. Tuition is going up.
The tuition is...
Shit's falling apart.
Yeah.
And they're being asked to pay $1 trillion/$225,000 to Hillary Clinton so she can come speak at some school foundation fundraiser.
Yeah.
Which...
Come on. And I think that they want her to, like, give it back to...
I know, it's weird, because now they've already paid her. Like, you can't...
But they paid her. But they also, like, she, I think, sort of, like, intends to give all the money to, like, the Clinton Global Initiative. Like, that's what she's been claiming to do with these speaking fees. But, like, also, I mean, like, what's...
They're going to a war chest, obviously.
Well, and also, like, what's the CG? I mean, like, that's... not to say that they're, like, not doing great work, but, like, that's also sort of, like...
That's her and her husband.
That's her paying herself.
That's how they have been continuing to live
since they were poor after the White House.
That's their job. that's where they make a living.
Yeah.
The Clinton Global Initiative.
So anyway, but he said our student government asked that Hillary Clinton. Oh, this is the student body president. He said our student government asked that Hillary Clinton returns part or all of the money back to the students, back to the university. And then he continued on, and he said, we've been seeing increases in tuition, we've been asking students and families to come back to the table, and it's time for private entities to come to the table as well, her being Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Come to the table, Hillary. Don't ask for $225,000.
Like, from a school?
Come on.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that when Bill Clinton spoke at my high school graduation, he did it for free.
I mean, your high school certainly didn't pay him $225,000.
No, exactly.
The public school system of New York didn't pay him.
No, exactly.
No.
I mean, like, I feel like there are times that you just... I don't mind if she gets speaking fees for speaking private events.
No, Bill Clinton came and spoke at Promax one year. Right. I'm sure they paid him, and they probably had to, and that's okay.
Right. Because what the hell... What else would he have been doing there?
Right.
He shouldn't have been there unless they paid him.
Yeah. Sorry, I just kicked the microphone.
Well, life goes on.
Yeah.
Our sound quality has never been so impressive that people are going to be shocked and appalled when they hear a weird noise. meanwhile.
Continuing in Hillary.
Yes.
And this shocked me. I feel like this has not been going reported enough, because it was very hilarious to me. I sort of had to, like, do a double take, because I, doing my Sunday morning Meet the Press watching, one of the big things that they did was David Gregory had interviewed Bill Clinton and also sort of, like, had, like, a round table at the Clinton Global Initiative, the CGI meeting that was happening just, I think, this last week. And they sort of, like, got into talking about, you know, what's going on in Iraq right now. And David Gregory it was a question in direct reference to sort of, like, how Dick Cheney has been out there sort of, like, ragging on everyone and, like, whether he thought that Dick Cheney was sort of, whether Bill Clinton thought that Dick Cheney was, like, the person who should be talking about, like, what's going on in the Middle East right now. Right. And Bill Clinton said something that was a little surprising to me. He said, well, I believe, you know, if they hadn't gone to war in Iraq, none of this would be happening.
Hmm.
Wait, what now? Hmm. While Hillary is in the audience, in the front row, with her picture in the walls or on the, you know, screens, that just smiling and nodding up a storm.
Like she had nothing to do with it.
Like she couldn't have cared less.
Couldn't agree with you more, Bill.
What?
Like, unbelievable.
Yeah. And then he went on, because Gregory then interjected and asked a follow-up about whether he was talking about, like, ISIS, like, in Syria, or what was going on specifically in Iraq, basically. And Clinton went on and he said, well, what happened in Syria wouldn't have happened in Iraq, because Iraq would not have been, in effect, drastically altered as it has been. So basically, just saying,
thanks,
like,
in part to his wife's vote, yeah, in Congress, I mean, the Senate, to go to war in Iraq.
Hello? She was, like, the biggest mouthpiece outside of the losers in the administration to go in that war in the first place.
Yeah. She's lost a presidential election over that.
Once.
She might do it again.
Bless her heart. But, and this is not helping, Bill.
No. You know what is helping? David Gregory not asking a fucking follow-up question.
I mean.
Like.
Which is not shocking.
No. Man-child syndrome strikes again.
I watch I'm just too lazy to watch anything else, because I always watch this. My roommate and I watch this together. And every day, every Sunday that we watch it, we're always like, should we be watching the CBS show? And then we always declare that we're going to. And then the thing is, it's on.
You're in the habit.
You're in the habit. And it's also, it's on too early. So yeah. The DVR has to do it. So I have to reset the DVR to do something, which actually isn't obviously that hard. But I mean,
I wouldn't know how to do it.
I forget yeah. to do it. If I don't do it in the
planning.
Moment, it's like, I would have to get up at like 7 o'clock on Sunday, or like have the foresight to do it at some point during the week. And I'm not doing
happening.
Either of those things.
No, of course not. Yeah.
So I'm stuck with David Gregory until the end of time, basically.
By Meet the Press.
I am. It's terrible.
Your
it's
DVR.
Not even, it's not good.
No, it's not. It's not good.
Nope.
That's clear. Meanwhile, in vaguely ridiculous news.
Oh, this is good.
This is like huge news this week, too.
It was big,
like,
news. I know.
So, okay. Seth Rogen and what's his face?
Okay.
Yeah, James Franco.
James Franco.
Have a movie coming out called The Interview.
Yeah.
In which it's about a talk show host that goes to North Korea with his producer and turns their trip into an assassination.
Right, he's gonna supposedly be interviewing Kim Jong-un,
right.
And then they sort of like
the
get
CIA
caught up in
kind
the CIA
of like
and
asks
then, like,
them
they're
to assassinate
him.
Yeah, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Which is a thing that people are doing in movies. They're always trying to kill the North Korean leader.
Yeah,
because it's not the first time that a comedy
Kim Jong. They were always doing this with
Kim
Jong-il. I mean,
yeah.
There was that. That movie.
There was an impersonator who was just like always working, impersonating him.
Yeah, there was. Well, Margaret Cho was impersonating him in 30
Oh,
Rock,
you're right, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
But there was also that movie, what was the one that the guys who did South Park did with like the puppets?
Yeah,
you know,
I know,
like,
I can't remember the name.
Kim Jong-il
was
a character
in that, yeah.
And they portrayed him like a, you know, bumbling idiot.
Yeah.
So like, this is not the first, I mean, I guess maybe we haven't talked about assassinating them. I don't
also,
know. But
Kim Jong-un, I feel like, has bigger pride issues than his father.
I think he does.
He's real unhappy. I will say in his defense, and this is maybe the only thing I'll say in his defense other than that he's often very entertaining, that it is rare and I think maybe a little uncalled for everyone to be so okay with calling for the assassination or portraying the assassination of a sitting leader.
I get it.
It's just sort of like disrespectful to a degree that is like maybe a little bit over the line.
I get it.
You know, it's like, would it be a smart move sort of diplomatically to have a film that's entirely about killing Vladimir Putin? Like, wouldn't be.
No.
Because Vladimir Putin is a proud man who is up to a lot of dictatorial type nonsense and is maybe not our best friend.
No.
But is also, like, respectfully the leader of Russia. Like, it is sort of extreme, and I know North Korea is extreme, so, like, obviously that's, you know, part of the deal here. But he's not a historic leader. He's the sitting leader of North Korea. This is, I know it's hard to believe because North Korea feels like it's caught in a time warp.
I know.
But, like, he's the present-day leader of North Korea. It is a little odd for a bunch of, like, major corporations to get behind, you know, because this is a studio film.
It's a big studio
project. Like, a bunch of big companies and, like, the American government and everyone is, like, totally behind a film that portrays assassinating a sitting leader.
Yeah. Well, we don't know that the American government is.
Well, no. But I mean, like...
But no, I get
you know
get
what I'm saying?
Saying.
Like,
yes,
no one was like, you know what, guys?
Let's maybe
this is
not
in bad
this.
Taste, and I think this is a bad move for our security.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that they have necessarily given their tacit approval of it or anything. But, like, this is a thing that was allowed to move forward without anyone being like, hold on.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
Is it really that bad for our security, though? Because I think they've proven that they can't
do
so
anything.
I mean, they've been trying to sort of, like, shoot a nuclear bomb, and they can't even sort of, like, get it,
my
you know,
feeling
off
about
the ground.
It is, it's, like, just sort of tacky. It's the kind of thing I would expect them to do.
Sure.
But well, it's not the kind of thing I want us to do necessarily.
Yeah. But you his response was sort of like...
Hilarious.
Super hilarious, though, because he said, he called the movie the most blatant act of terrorism and war that will absolutely not be tolerated. And then he said, if the U.S. administration allows and defends the showing of the film, a merciless countermeasure will be taken. Like, what would that be?
I'm so curious to know.
I'm curious to know, too.
More starvation in his own country, perhaps.
I was going to say, less electricity for right. all, right? I mean, like, what is that?
Maybe they'll, turn off the lights on the bridge to China again. It's curious.
Yeah.
But I do, as much as I think that this is a funny thing to have happened, it does leave me with a weird taste in my mouth. Just because it's like a sort of aggressively tacky move.
I want to see how it plays out.
Yeah. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Curious to know. Oh, look, the World Cup is still happening. Brent can tell you all about it.
So can Ann Poulter. Actually, she can't.
No, she can't.
She's really mad that it's happening.
Socialism is encroaching on America.
Yeah. I mean, it's odd to me. I don't know if it's just because so many people are able to watch it online now, or if it's just sort of like one of those things where like social media just sort of like allows you to really sort of like know what's going on and also sort of like want to know what's going on because it's what people are talking about. But like, people are batshit crazy about the World Cup right now.
Fucking World Cup is everywhere.
The American Germany match had more people sign up to watch on Watch ESPN, which is like their app, than did to sign up to watch on the digital app to watch the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's bonkers.
And it didn't have as much viewers as the Super Bowl, but it was like one of ESPN, it was the most watched soccer match ever in the history of the country. Like, people are really fucking going crazy.
Yeah.
And we lost that game, but in typical American fashion, I was joking, I was like, we lost, but we're through. It's like...
We snuck in under the wire.
We only lost 1-0. The other teams that needed to do what they had to do for us to sort of like get in did what they were supposed to do.
So we just sort
of like everything went exactly as planned with us losing and still making it to the next round. We play tomorrow.
Yeah.
When you could be listening to this podcast and watching the game at the same time.
Hmm. Boy, that sounds thrilling.
The amount
of soccer watching that's been going on
would really elevate
in my office has just been.
I know. Everybody has it on.
It is boring me to tears.
Well, it's boring.
I am bored to death every moment
The thing about soccer, and this is the thing about, a lot of sports that I don't like. Well,
all sports that Brent likes and sports he doesn't like.
Right. Well, is that it's boring until it's not boring, but the times that it's not boring are just way too few and far between. Yeah. Similar to sort of like baseball in that respect, where like,
what another game that I would argue has that problem? Happens. Football. That's a game that I would argue has that problem times 10.
Right, fair enough. Maybe you just have to, I think with sports is that you really just have to know very clearly like what's going on at all times for you to like consider something happening. Because
In football, I miss everything.
I was going to say, I know a lot about football and I would contend that every second of the 3 hours that it takes to play a football game, something is happening.
I would argue that the exact opposite is true in football. That 90% of football is people standing around waiting to play for 10 seconds and then stopping. But I would also, and soccer, I find more exciting in a world in which I'm forced to watch a sport. But because I don't like to watch any sports, and I would argue that all of these games take way too long to finish. Like, if soccer was a 45-minute match that literally just took 45 minutes and then you were done, I'd be like, all right, I could watch that. But, like, these things are going on for hours. There's, like, multiple games a day. Like, who has time for all of this?
Yeah.
Everyone, apparently.
I just
realized country.
That I was eating ice. Sorry.
Well, life goes on.
Oops. Kicking the table. I'm eating ice.
In any case, someone who shares my opinion of soccer, but for different reasons.
Wildly different reasons.
Is Ann Coulter. Because Ann Coulter is a little concerned about how soccer might signal an encroachment of socialism.
Great.
As you might imagine. Yes. If that's what soccer brings, I'm all into soccer.
Perfect.
I'm for soccer.
Yeah. Yeah.
In favor of socialism and soccer.
She said, and she wrote a whole op-ed about this, but she said, any growing interest in soccer can only be a sign of the nation's moral decay. Like, what?
Well, for one thing, she claims that in soccer, there are no heroes, no losers, no accountability, and no child's fragile self-esteem is
broken. All right.
Has she played or watched a soccer match ever?
All right. Every single country has their own soccer hero.
Yeah.
No accountability? What does she mean by that? Do you remember when there was a World Cup not long ago where Colombia scored an own goal, like where one of their he was killed.
Yeah,
he was accountable for that.
Yeah,
because he was murdered.
Yeah, you know what often happens in a soccer match is that one of the teams loses.
Right.
So they're losers.
There's always a loser.
There's always a loser. Yes. There's never not a loser in soccer.
And unless things have unless changed from when I was growing
there are ties
up,
sometimes,
there's always
but then someone loses ultimately because one team doesn't move on.
Correct. Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, someone's losing. Oh. Only one team is going to win the World Cup.
Half of the teams that started at the World Cup have now lost because they're gone.
And now we're losers.
That's right.
They're now accountable for that because they're going home as losers.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Some that might die.
That's sports. There are plenty of heroes. Like we said, every country has one.
Yeah.
It's just like, and there's nothing like being bad at soccer to bruise your self-esteem in a country that's obsessed with soccer.
Oh my God, I know.
Like
some of the countries that like lost and had to go home. I mean, Spain didn't move on.
The shame situation.
England didn't get to move on.
Extreme.
Portugal didn't get to move on.
Isn't it embarrassing that we moved on and England and Spain didn't move on?
The rest of the world is.
Like, they must want to just fucking kill us.
I really sort of like, I mean, the reason that I would want to win the World Cup would be for that reason, as opposed
just to
like really.
Be F you, never.
I was gonna say it would. I mean, it would give me, I guess, some sense of pride.
Sure.
But the pride would come from knowing that everyone else was angry.
Yeah, I was also not thrilled, surprised by how seriously everyone took Mexico's loss.
Oh,
LA
it was dramatic.
LA was.
Well, we've
real,
got 2 million Mexicans.
Yeah,
here,
LA was so. Like real invested in the Mexico. I did. Unrelated note, but I went and saw Chef last night, and there's a line that's a joke in Spanish that they don't translate, that's just like a throwaway. Everyone in the audience got it. I was like, oh, I guess we are in LA.
Yeah.
I got it, and then I got to explain it to Lauren because she didn't get
it.
Because I only vaguely speak Spanish, but I understood the joke. In any case, unrelated note. The other reasons that Ann Coulter doesn't approve of soccer include that the New York Times likes it, that it's foreign, and foreigners like it, that Obama likes it.
Yeah.
And then she also seemed to think that it was somehow similar to she compared it to the metric system. Now,
okay.
I am...
Don't even get live. Let's start on the metric system.
A staunch hater of the metric system, as everyone knows.
Yeah.
I would not argue that soccer encroaching on American sporting interests is anything like the metric system.
Nor would I.
Because no one's forced to play soccer.
Nope.
If the metric system comes in, you're forced to measure things using a different system that's annoying. If soccer becomes a popular sport, you're not forced to play it.
Nope.
Just as you're not forced to play football now. Football's That's popular. Right. I've never played a game of football in my life.
No.
I can't throw a football. Can't
nope.
catch a football. If
yep.
people throw footballs at me, I duck because I'm a little scared of the shape of a football. But
yeah, we can poke your eye out.
Yeah, exactly. I've been able to go on.
Yeah.
In any case, I'm not worried.
Oh, boy.
But I'm a little worried. Final news.
Final news.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this is a good one.
This is the greatest story of the week.
Yeah, it
for
really
sure.
is. Yeah. So there is, as you know, we have a huge situation going on the border right now.
Where there's like a trillion bajillion undocumented children sitting in like a warehouse.
Right.
And like no one knows what to do with them.
Yeah. So that's a problem.
That's a problem.
So there's this guy whose name is William Gein.
Gein. Let's
Gein.
Call him.
Who knows?
We're Gein call
sounds
Gein.
Dumber. Let's say
yes.
Gein. He's the president of Americans for Legal Immigration PAC. ALIPAC, as you may know it by.
Yes.
You don't, because you've never heard of it. Anyway, he wrote that Americans this week should send more than 10,000 pairs of used underwear that range anywhere from, quote, gently used to those in bad shape to President Obama, House Speaker John Boehner, and undocumented immigrants in detention facilities. Basically, this is on the heels of DHS, right. Basically, they solicited...
underwear for these
right,
people that are sitting at the border with nowhere
underwear.
To go. Yeah,
right. So
people need clean underwear.
Right. They wanted 42,000 pairs
yeah.
of underwear. So obviously,
he's mad that our tax dollars might be going to 42,000 pairs of underwear for
right.
undocumented people.
Exactly. Yeah. But he had some pretty gem quotes, and he's
yeah.
also we'll get to some of the other things that he has said about other issues in the past because
yeah.
he's fucking quack, as you might imagine. Anyway, he said, using our tax money to buy illegals 42,000 pairs of new underwear, we would like to send the illegals and DC politicians a message by mailing them our used underwear, and some of our pairs are in really bad shape due to the bad economy and all of the jobs illegal immigrants are taking from Americans.
Yes.
Which is
your underwear is probably in bad shape because
you're a gross human being.
Right.
You're a gross, fat human being
yeah.
who has skin marks on their tighty whities who are two sizes too
right.
big that you've been wearing since the 1980s.
If you have two pairs of underwear, you have the means with which to have clean underwear. So I refuse his point.
Right, exactly.
You know who doesn't? Undocumented people sitting in a detention facility
no.
for God knows how long
yeah.
with no working showers or toilets, it seems like,
right.
and they're all sleeping on mattresses on the floor, and they're kids.
Right, I'm just going to go out there
scene.
And say, if you are, I'm just going to make a broad statement.
Do it.
If you are wearing underwear that are like that, You are a disgusting person.
Bold statements.
Just
bold statements coming from Brent Thornburg.
Who is doing that? Like, don't be gross. Just stop doing that. Stop being gross.
Yeah, don't be
anyway,
gross.
So
this guy, as you might imagine, has a track record of saying hilarious things.
Well,
and
he's
making
an idiot.
Ridiculous
he's a gross
comments.
Person.
He's a gross.
We just I just established that he's gross. So, and he's dumb too.
Yeah,
he's going to establish for himself right now that he's dumb because he said some other doozies.
Yeah. Earlier this year, he called on the government to treat immigrants like cancerous tumors.
Oh, yes.
And then equated immigration reform to national rape.
Rape. Again.
Like, don't say the word rape.
Fucking
if you are a
rape.
Republican and you are male, or you are a Democrat and you are male, if you are a person...
Even if you are using it metaphorically about the immigration situation.
You
like,
don't say the word rape.
Don't do it.
It's a bad plan. He called for an unarmed army of civilian volunteers to go to El Paso to, quote, shut down the immigrant youth invasion.
What were they going to do?
Like, what? Like, a militia's going to go in and, like, do
kill
what?
Them?
Like, that's not a plan.
Round them up and what?
Like,
deport them? They can't do that.
First of all, you don't want to round them up because then they're your problem. If there's one thing you know about...
Once they're in your possession.
Right. It's like kidnapping a baby. It seems like a great plan to get at the parents until you realize you're stuck with a baby at the end of the day. And you don't want to have to take care of some random crying baby just to get at the parents.
Yeah.
You don't want to kidnap a bunch of kids.
No.
You don't want to round them up. There's thousands of them. They outnumber your militia for sure.
Yeah.
So, like, that's not a real thing. Anyway, I mean, it's obviously not a real thing, but...
He also wrote that immigrants are gang raping, molesting kids, drinking, driving, killing, and joining gangs that try to feed our children cocaine and methamphetamine at the earliest age they can.
I bet, especially those kids that are stuck in detention facilities.
Oh, yes, exactly.
They're the worst.
They're the biggest methamphetamine
those 7-year-olds
feeders
pushing,
out there.
Pushing cocaine and methamphetamines.
I mean...
Like,
no.
No.
But this is the thing that people who are against immigration are thinking a lot, because my crazy aunt, who is very anti-immigration, is always posting things that, like, she gets from some anti-immigration, like, Facebook site, where it's, like, it'll be an article about one illegal immigrant who, like, did some sort of, like, heinous crime or something. As if, like, the rest of the citizenry of the United States...
Should just understand that that's what everyone's doing.
Well, and also just sort of, like... You know, white people have been doing this for hundreds of years in this country.
Right.
Like, it's not as if, like, you know, the one person who got pulled over for drunk driving who happened to be an illegal immigrant, like, it's not doing worse things than, like, that's bad. I'm not advocating drunk driving. But,
no,
like,
but
that's what...
It's not like white American citizens aren't doing that.
Are doing
yeah.
every day, all day, every
this
day.
This is the immigration version of the welfare queen argument.
Totally.
And this is... problematic because demonizing undocumented people does not make it easier for DHS and anyone else to figure out what to do with these people in this detention center, most of whom are children. And also, I think, would behoove us to remember that all of us came here as immigrants once. I once wrote a Huffington Post piece about...
We were all gang rapers and methamphetamine pushers at one point in our lives.
I wrote a Huffington Post piece about... my grandmother, the anchor baby.
Anchor babies, yeah, I remember that. That
because,
was a good one.
Yeah, because my great-grandmother was born in China.
Yeah.
And did not have American citizenship until her second American passport. So...
When they realized
during the McCarthy era that she wasn't actually a citizen. So, you know, these are American stories. This is what it's like to come to America.
Uh-huh.
In any case, we leave you with that terrible thought. Hopefully next week we'll only have good news to report, because this week has been a real shit show.
It's not going to happen.
But, won't happen.
I mean, but fingers crossed.
It's July 4th. We might not have any news. It might just be patriotic thoughts about America. We might, you know, think a little bit about what the Constitution means to us.
Sure. Let's
pontificate a little.
Yeah, let's pontificate.
Yeah, because we should say, for... My mom always says this. She, you know, because she's often got, you know, a lot of liberal crackpot ideas. And... Republicans like to pretend like liberals are, like, not as patriotic as them.
Yeah.
She's always like, I love the Constitution. I think it's one of the greatest...
Doesn't she carry it?
Yeah, she carries a copy of the Constitution with her. And I agree, it's one of the greatest, you know, sort of political documents.
Yeah.
Not just in American history, but in, like, world history. Like, it's it's a really well-designed plan.
Yeah.
That was very cleverly laid out and set the stage for a great, you know, type of government that we're ruining right now. But... So, Brent and I probably have a lot of patriotic thoughts that you're not even expecting from us.
Yeah.
We love the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
There it is. And on that note,
bye.
We'll say goodnight.
Oh, happy 4th.
Oh, happy 4th.
Yeah.